When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Biscuits and Jam from Southern Living. I'm your host, Sid Evans, and today I'm talking with someone whose musical talent definitely runs in the family. Emmy Russell was born in Hurricane Mills, Tennessee, and grew up touring and performing with her grandmother, Loretta Lynn, as well as her mother, Patsy Lynn. She doesn't sound much like the Queen of Country, but Emmy has a beautiful voice and plenty of talent as a songwriter. On an episode of American Idol earlier this spring, she wowed the judges with an intensely personal song that caught the world's attention and earned her a ticket to Hollywood. It was called Skinny, and it touched on her past struggles with an eating disorder, as well as a deep lack of confidence that has plagued her for years. Now Emmy is finding her own voice and looking at a bright future in music. We'll talk about all that, as well as what Loretta was like as a grandmother and the very special guitar she gave Emmy on this week's Biscuits and Jam. Emmy Russell, welcome to Biscuits and Jam.
Thank you for having me. Kind of makes me hungry. Biscuits and Jam.
Great to see you.
Thank you.
Where am I reaching you right now?
I am in Nashville, Tennessee right now. Goodlettsville.
Okay. And you've been there for most of your life, at least in the Nashville area, right?
Yeah. I was born in Hurricane Mills, which was where Meemaw and everyone kind of grew up. And then we moved to Kingston Springs, and now I'm in Nashville. So, yeah.
Okay. One of my favorite cities. So, Emmy, I just got to tell you, I interviewed your grandmother on this podcast.
Wow.
And it was truly one of the highlights of my career, getting to talk to her. I remember we talked about biscuits and cornbread and songwriting, and I will never forget her laugh, which was so real and so genuine.
Yeah.
And you could just tell she had done a million interviews, but she was just right there and was just so lovely.
I'm kind of tearing up as you're talking about her laugh. It's so genuine, and she's so present with who she's with, too.
Yeah.
So she doesn't even think about the 100 interviews she's ever done. She's just, like, with. So
yeah.
That's cool. Wow, thank you for telling me that. I actually had no idea. So it's even a cooler honor to be here now that I've known that she's been here, too.
Well, maybe you can go listen to it at some point. The album Still Woman Enough was coming out.
Yep.
And I remember she sang a little bit of One's on the Way, which I'll also never forget.
Wow, that's so neat.
But so, tell me about your grandmother and your relationship with her. I mean, you called her Meemaw, right?
Yeah, I call her Meemaw. I grew up going on the road with her. So my mom, she actually was in a duo country group called The Lynns.
Yep.
And they were on the road with her touring. And my mom became her manager. So whenever I was born, they kind of quit doing their out in Nashville thing and went on tour with her and opened up. And I was just on the road as a baby. As soon as I was out, I was actually born on my grandpa and my grandma's anniversary, so I was a premature kid. Thank God kind of was like, I'm going to send her on the day that they got married, just to show her that they're alike. So,
wow.
Yeah, just grew up singing, 2 years old, singing on the road, and very close my entire life, very close.
What a special connection, and to have that date. I mean, every time your birthday comes around, you're thinking about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do think about her and him. I never met my grandpa, but I think it's really cool. I think about her a lot on my birthday.
Well, I want to ask you about that house. You grew up in one of the coolest houses in the South. I mean, or at least spending a lot of time there at Hurricane Mills. And it must have been like a fantasy land for a kid.
Yeah.
But of course, for you, I guess for a long time, it was just what all houses looked like.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about that house. Did you have favorite rooms that you loved to go into?
Gosh, strangely, I loved the kitchen, all the cool wallpapers. They always had these really neat wallpapers and like this little butter churner that I used to always play with as a kid. And I loved the columns outside. I would always play around the columns of the house. Meemaw actually had a house behind that house. So I spent primarily a lot of my childhood in the house behind the house that she was raised in.
Right.
It was so cool and so fun. I used to go over there all the time and just play. Yeah, I love that house.
I'm guessing you probably spent a little bit of time in her dress closet.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, they're so strict on people. Meemaw, she doesn't care. She's like, oh, honey, go ahead. You can wear that anytime. But, you know, everyone else was like, don't touch that. That's like prize winner. And I'm like, it's just a dress. But for her, she just saw it as a dress. But everyone saw it as something special, which it is. But
yeah.
Well, I've tried on a few things.
I mean, I would think so. We talked about those dresses when we did the interview. And she said, I love putting them on. And she said, people laugh about it, but I worked hard and I earned these dresses and I'm going to wear them whenever I want to.
Oh, Tim Cobb, actually, the guy that lived with her, her assistant, took care of her and all that kind of stuff. He actually made her all those dresses.
Really?
And he actually passed away like a month after she passed away, which was so weird because it's just back to back.
Yeah.
One kind of wanted to be with the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Emmy, you mentioned the kitchen. Your grandmother talked to me a lot about food, and I'm wondering if you remember her doing a lot of just sort of ordinary grandmother things, like, you know, baking cookies or making pancakes, that kind of thing.
You know, it's funny. Meemaw never cooked for me or anyone. It was always Tim. Tim did it all. But now, did she have a cooking book? Yes. But did I ever get to taste any of her cooking? No. So unfair. But she did make food.
Well, I remember hearing somewhere, it might have actually been your mom or your aunt that said this, that her favorite thing in the world was banana pudding.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And it's mine too.
It is.
Yes. She loved banana pudding too. But I'd always make her a peanut butter milkshake. So peanut butter milkshakes, brownie brittle, and banana pudding. Those are her three top favorite desserts.
So, did she have a particular kind that she liked? I mean, would you say she was kind of a banana pudding connoisseur? Was she specific about what she liked?
What we always had around was the one with, what are they, those little wafers?
Oh,
what are
yeah.
those called? Vanilla wafers?
Those vanilla wafers, yeah.
Oh.
We also talked a lot about the holidays, and she loved the holidays. She talked about having these big get-togethers with the family. And I'm just wondering what your memories of some of those get-togethers would be.
I remember just having so many cousins and then like all around the house, just everyone running. And then everyone would get their turn to say hi to Meemaw. And then we would like open up presents and we'd give her hugs. It was just like a big family celebration. So many cousins. I don't even know all my cousins' names. I know their faces, but so many.
You
so
can't even keep up.
So much family shows yeah. up. I can't keep up with it all. And there's always a new baby being born. And so it's just kind of like.
Yeah. Well, I got to imagine that there was a lot of music involved.
A lot of musicians actually in the family. Yes. So many musicians in the family.
And so for the holidays, was there a lot of singing or was it a more kind of serious affair?
It was more just everyone kind of like laughing and being around each other. There wasn't really much music, probably because everyone does music all the time. We're like, that's the last thing we want to do. We want to just hang out and talk.
Right.
We're all very close.
Yeah.
Except for the 100 billion cousins.
Well, you got a long life ahead of you and you can meet them all someday.
Yes.
Well, Emmy, I want to come back to your grandmother in a minute, but I want to ask you about your mom, Patsy.
Yeah.
Who was named after Patsy Cline.
She was.
Which is so cool. She had and has had a successful music career of her own and performed for a long time with your aunt, also produced several of Loretta's records, right?
Mm-hmm. She produced, wrote.
So I'm wondering how instrumental she was in your musical journey and what your kind of connection is with your mom when it comes to music.
Me and my mom are super close. I'd always take advice from my mom. Whenever I got about 16, I was kind of like, okay, mom, give me some space.
Yeah.
Because she's got such a strong personality. I kind of had to like grow away from my mom a little bit, like just a little bit. But yeah, she was my manager on the road whenever I started opening up for Meemaw when I was like 17, 16. So we're super tight. Me and my mom write songs together very rarely, but we used to write all the time together.
And so when did that really start for you in terms of the songwriting? When did you have a song, something that you'd put down that felt like, okay, this feels like something I've tapped into that I hadn't really tapped into before. When did that kind of start for you?
Well, I started writing short stories first in school. Like, I would just write, like, the hero story of the underdog, and then she, like, rises up. But my first song I think I wrote, it was for the talent show, and I was in the second grade, and it was called Keep Trying Again, and it was just about math and how I just failed, but then I was like, keep trying again. But then whenever I was about 9, I wrote a song called The Mirror Can Lie. The hook was, like, the mirror can lie. It doesn't show you what's inside. So I was really always attracted to, like, identity, finding out who you are. And I don't know why. Now I look back at it and I'm like, oh, that makes sense now. But I was always about those kinds of songs.
I mean, Emmy, that's pretty powerful stuff for a 9-year-old.
Nemo always told me, she's like, you're like a 40-year-old woman trapped in a 9-year-old body. That's what she said.
Yeah.
I learned guitar whenever I was 7 really well, but I got my first guitar when I was 4. And then going on the road, I don't know, original music's just how I process.
Was that a guitar that came from your grandmother? Because you have that song called Meemaw's Guitar.
That was later on in the story.
Okay.
But my first guitar, my dad got for me, Baby Martin.
Which is a great guitar to start on, yeah.
Too nice.
Yeah.
Whenever I have kids, I'm like, not going to put them on a Baby Martin.
Wow. Okay, so you're really young when you start putting things down on paper and start thinking about songwriting. And I saw this video of you. I think you were maybe like 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you were performing a song called If I Die Young.
If I Die Young, yeah.
And yeah, your grandmother is standing right beside you on the stage and just lets you sing the whole thing. And she seems so proud. Was that a big moment for you, or was that something that was kind of happening regularly at that point?
At that point, it was happening like almost every other week.
Okay.
And so I would sing one song everyone knew, which was If I Die Young, and then I'd sing an original song. Meemaw always told me to do that because everyone wants to sing along with you. But then if you want to share your heart, do that too, but not too much. That's her advice. And then I sang If I Die Young, and everyone loved whenever I sang that song. But yeah, I was like 11 years old.
Wow. So fearless. And up there in front of, I'm sure, a lot of people with your grandmother on stage, right?
So many, so many.
Well, I'm curious about the guitar that you mentioned in the song, Meemaw's Guitar. So if it wasn't your first guitar, was there a specific reference there to a guitar that she gave you, or was it more of a general kind of idea?
It was a real guitar. Meemaw passed me down her guitar when I was 15 at the Ryman Auditorium, Grendel Opry. And she said, you're the one that can do it. She always thought I had this spark about me ever since I was a little kid. And she felt that she needed to give me the guitar as the torch in a way, or the mantle. And Lord knows that I probably can't hold that. That's too much. But she passed me down her guitar when I was 15.
Wow.
Yeah. She wrote like all these Don't Come Home and Drinkin', just these like big songs.
On that guitar.
On that guitar. Yeah. Holds a lot of history.
Sure does.
So that song's called Unwinding the Strings.
Mm.
That's just all the history, unwinding it all and thinking about it. So I was 15 when I wrote a song about her passing me down the guitar, and I sang it that night that she passed me it down.
Wow.
In a way of kind of like honoring the moment.
Is that a guitar that you pick up often?
Well, it's actually at the museum.
Oh, it is?
When I want to go get it, I can.
When you really need some extra mojo.
When I need some extra mojo. That means when I really need some extra pressure.
Huh? Yeah, right.
I like very rarely playing it because, yeah, it's a pretty mojo guitar.
Yeah, there is some pressure, I'm sure. She's got so many great songs. There's too many to count, Emmy. But when you think about all these songs and these songs that you grew up with, you know, Coal Miner's Daughter, Fist City, You Ain't Woman Enough. I mean, is there one that you were especially fond of or that you had a strong connection to?
Mm. My dad actually wrote a song with her, and it was called Miss Being Mrs. And every time I heard that song, I would just cry. I miss being Mrs. Like, that's just such a cool idea. I think she actually told my dad that, and then he kind of helped her finish it. I love Coal Miner's Daughter. I feel like that has a very special meaning to it because it's her life. And I walked in that house, and I was doing a video because I was doing a tribute for her, Coal Miner's Daughter, and I sang it, and I said, nothing left but the floors, nothing lives here anymore except the memories of a coal miner's daughter. It made me cry thinking about it, but I was walking through that hallway, and I was like, man, nothing left but the floors, you know, except the memories of Meemaw. That's how I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that song's really special to me now that I'm older.
Mm, I'm sure. After the break, I'll talk more with Emmy Russell about taking a few years off and why she chose a song called Skinny on American Idol. I'll also ask her a few rapid-fire questions that we call the jam session.
I'm Emmy Russell, and this is my Southern Living Jam Session.
All right, Emmy, sweet or unsweet?
Oh, gosh. Sweet. Duh.
Acoustic or electric?
Acoustic, for sure.
Thanksgiving or Christmas?
Christmas.
All the way.
All the way.
I'd love to sing a duet with blank.
Oh, my gosh. I love Ed Sheeran. I'd love to sing a duet with Ed Sheeran. Gonna be real.
I think that's gonna happen.
I hope so.
My favorite southern town is blank.
Oh, gosh. You know what? I really just love Nashville.
Good answer.
I love Nashville.
The best dog I ever had was named blank.
Lola.
Great name.
Great Weimaraner. Beautiful Weimaraner.
My favorite Loretta Lynn song is blank.
Coal Miner's Daughter.
My favorite hometown restaurant is blank.
Sky King Pizza.
Ooh, okay. I got to check that one out.
It's good.
The best dive bar in Nashville is blank.
Oh, the Fillin' Station in Kingston Springs, Tennessee.
All right, last one. The most southern thing about me is blank.
You know, people say it's my accent, but yeah, it's probably my accent.
There you go. Well, Emmy, I want to ask you about a song of yours, and it's the song that you performed at American Idol, and it's called Skinny.
Yeah.
And you said it was about someone who's struggling with an eating disorder. Tell me a little bit about what you were thinking when you wrote that song.
Well, on the road, people would always take pictures of me from down below. And I started developing an eating disorder when I was like 16, 17 out on the road. And I just stopped eating and drinking a lot of coffee. And you're going all the time. And I just really cared what people thought of me. I think the pressure really got to me. So much so that I quit the tour. And then I kind of went on, did a mission trip for like 4 years. I was gone. And I was really free from that eating disorder. And then it came back to me when I came back to the United States. And I was feeling that pressure again of not feeling enough. And then like a friend came up to me, his name's Dennis, and he said, hey, I got an idea called Skinny. I feel like you're supposed to write it. He had no idea. I told no one that I was going through an eating disorder. This was about a year and a half ago. And I said, I'm in eating disorder recovery right now. And he was like, I had no idea. And then several months after that, we wrote the song because I could actually sing it. So that song comes from a real place. I didn't say that, but I was the girl that had the eating disorder.
Wow. Well, it's an incredibly powerful song, and I think you've seen that and felt that through this whole experience. But it also, it seems like a gutsy one, particularly to share with such a big audience and on such a big stage. What made you decide this is the one that I want to share on this stage?
Well, whenever I arrived, I was going to sing a song called Breakup Song, and I did sing it. And they said, give us more songs. And I said, well, I do have a song called Skinny, and I sang it.
So you weren't planning on singing that one when you walked in
there?
No.
Oh, my gosh. No. No, I was not planning on it. I just kind of felt in that hour, you need to sing the song. That one's really close to my heart. So I was like, I guess I need to do that one.
It's funny what people say. It's been with me since 7th grade. You were pretty fake. Drop the weight, so at my birthday party, I skip the cake.
Well, Emmy, I'm wondering what kind of response you've gotten since it came out from people who are going through something similar.
I get people sending pictures of their daughters that were on feeding tubes saying, like, thank you for saying this. You know, 70 million people in the world have suffered with an eating disorder, and no one talks about it. But there was a reason why the original video was Songhouse. It went viral because in the dark, people have stuff, hard stuff. And that was mine. And it's 70 million other people's.
Wow.
So, yeah, I got a lot of DMs, a lot of messages, a lot of calls.
I'm sure. And I don't think you're done talking about it or sharing this or being on this journey either.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Emmy, I want to ask you about another special performance that I saw that you did at the Grand Ole Opry when you performed a duet with Lucas Nelson. And it was a song called Lay Me Down.
Yes.
And what was really cool about that to me was that Willie Nelson, Lucas's dad, and Loretta had performed the song together about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. What did that moment mean to you to be standing on that stage in that circle honoring your grandmother?
Gosh, I remember that moment. I was sitting in the pews and just crying the entire night. I don't know if anyone's ever felt the Holy Spirit before listening to this, but it felt like I was just crying for no reason. Like something was just bigger than me that was there. And I just really felt like it was just her presence that filled the space. And I remember just walking up there, and that was the first time that she wasn't standing next to me like you saw when I was 11. You know, I remember I told the crowd, and I just wanted to bring them in that memory with me. And I said, this is the first time that Meemaw's not in the corner watching me with her proud eyes. So just thank you for being here. And then everyone there felt like this grief of her, but almost like a celebration of her life all together with me. And then having Lucas next to me, this humble human being, like he's so humble. I said, I think I need to say something. And he said, well, go on ahead. You lead the show. And I'm like, Lucas Nelson, this is my first performance since I left tour with Meemaw when I was 19. I was living in Brazil. I was gone for 4 years. And for him to do that was really gracious. And then it got nominated for Performance of the Year for CMT. It didn't win, but
which is so great. What an honor. Yeah.
I don't know. Truth resonates. It just all felt bigger than me.
Had you been on that stage before with your grandmother?
The Grimen, yes. I played with her. That was whenever she passed me down her guitar. Oh, wow. I just now put that together. So she gave me her guitar in the same place where I sang for her. She gave me that guitar when I was 15, and I sang about her life, honoring her passing in the same place. I just now thought about that.
It's a really special performance, and I'm sure everybody was very much feeling it in the room that night. You know, you said you left for a number of years, about 4 years. Was this mostly kind of a big, long mission trip? Just tell me a little bit about that journey.
It was like a missionary school kind of thing, non-denominational, Christian. But I went, I didn't believe in God. My whole family did believe in God, but I didn't believe in God. I was on the tour, and I remember meeting Selena Gomez, and I was like, why am I not happy? I have everything I've ever wanted. You know, I'm following in my grandmother's footsteps, and I couldn't fill that hole inside. And so Meemaw had her stroke. And then I said, okay, this is a curse because, you know, she's sick, but it's, I can find out who am I outside of you. I was having a really bad eating disorder at the time. So I went to Kona, Hawaii, and I had like a deep encounter with God. The preacher, he called me out in the crowd, and he said, you. And I said, oh my gosh, she's preaching on hunger. And I said, God, I do have hunger. And then that moment, I just felt like a pin drop in my spirit. And he said, supernatural creativity. And he said, you're going to know who you are, your identity. And I felt like I never knew my identity outside my grandma. And so for that time period, I was just Emmy that lived in Kona. And then I moved to Brazil. And then I always had this desire for creativity. And so I came back and got involved in the music. But yeah, I was gone for quite some time.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a very worthwhile journey. That is for sure.
Oh, I wish people would just take 6 months. If you're unhappy, then please just take 6 months of your life and dive deep.
Go somewhere.
Do something that you love. I told my mom, I said, Mom, I don't want to be a singer anymore. And I never thought that I would ever come back to it. Like, I'll never, ever use Meemaw's guitar ever again, you know? How can I ever pick up that guitar and feel like I can measure up?
Well, Emmy, you've come back to it in a pretty big way.
Yeah, I would have never thought, hey, you're going to be on American Idol, and you're going to sing a song about your eating disorder that you're suffering with right now. And yeah, they're going to say that you're also related to Loretta Lynn.
Well, you talked about your grandmother's kind of spirituality and everyone in your family, or a lot of people in your family, having that connection. And she came out with this book last spring, just a few months after she died, and it was called A Song and a Prayer. I was looking at it, and there's a line in there that says most people don't stop to smell the roses. They're too busy worrying about everything.
Mm-hmm.
People are the same in every generation. They just find new things to worry over. Does that sound like her?
Gosh, yeah, it does. She's really creative in her wording.
Well, I love that. And it sounds like she wanted to kind of leave.
I love that too.
A little gift for people after she was
gone.
And
I love that it's that book.
Yeah. Well, Emmy, I'm sure that you're going to have a lot of opportunities after American Idol is over. What are you most excited about? What are you looking forward to?
Gosh, I think just, I showed up to my audition with no makeup on and I played my most vulnerable song. I think I can just be myself. And I'm really excited that I can just be myself and being ordinary and not changing everything about yourself to look like you're from Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it works and people resonate. And so I think if anything, it's like being myself in the music industry, being it myself and talking to you. Or I'm still a little nervous though, because I'm getting used to all this talking and stuff. But I don't know, just learning how to just show up.
Well, just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Well, Emmy, I just have one more question for you.
Okay.
What does it mean to you to be Southern?
You know, it's funny. Well, first I thought of food. That's true. And then I'm talking to you, so I thought of biscuits. And I was like, well, those are really good. Biscuits are my favorite food. I don't know if you know that. Gosh. Being Southern to me, honestly, just means that if one person's falling, the other person's there, like right there. I have so many friends that would tell me how it is. If ever I got too big in my head, they'd be like, hey, you remember where you came from now? And I'm like, oof. I feel like they're not scared to get dirty when they tell you the truth. And being Southern to me just means, well, the food and then just the people are just so there for you. There's that hospitality. It's real, the Southern hospitality. And just like very truthful.
Yeah.
Meemaw was a little bit too truthful sometimes.
She was pretty truthful.
So truthful. And I think that that's what gave me the ammunition to write a song like Skinny. I think I'm completely different than my grandma. But someone commented and said, you're so much like her, because that was such a gutsy song to sing, just like so many songs in her time were so gutsy. And I was like, oh, wow. Maybe she gave me a little truth gene, but was it scary for her like it is for me? I think probably a little less for her. She's very brave. She's very brave.
Well, I think you're pretty brave yourself. And
thank you.
You're doing beautiful things and writing some beautiful music and keep at it.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for being on Biscuits and Jam.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Emmy Russell. Southern Living is based in Birmingham, Alabama. Be sure to follow Biscuits and Jam on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And we would love your feedback. If you could rate this podcast and leave us a review, preferably a nice one, we'd really appreciate it. You can also find us online at southernliving.com/biscuitsandjam. Our theme song is by Sean Watkins of Nickel Creek. I hope you'll join me next time when I'll be talking with the singer-songwriter Tyler Hubbard, one of the founding members of Florida Georgia Line. We'll see you then.